My talk is not related to computation, but it's a very basic rigorous theory, very basic general and rigorous theory. And so, like, there's many rigorous and errors right recently not useful, but I want to make some future this is about the Brownian motion, but I want to talk about it in conjunction with the dynamic coarse grain. So the Brownian motion, you all know that it started from this phenomenological equation. So if you have a big particle in the environment of freeze,
I think you should take the microphone here, otherwise it's like a side
this particle is macroscopic, so that you have this equation of motion, if this particle becomes smaller, then the particle just starts. You observe that it just keeps moving around, and therefore you add this Langevin force, and that's the phenomenological, the traditional approach. Now, on the other hand, if you look at this problem from the very microscopic view, so this is just, okay, what you have is just this set of equations. You have particles and the molecules, and so you have this equation of motion, and so therefore you can regard this as an sort of the dynamical coarse grain, the result of the dynamical coarse graining. And so the thing that I want to discuss here is that how does this classical procedure, what kind of message that this classical procedure tells us. Now, the important part of the theory of Brownian motion is that this fluctuation dissipation theorem. It says that this random force is related to this friction constant, theta. And you can derive it in a number of ways. For example, that you can, or you just think about the free Brownian motion, where there is no external potential. And so this is the equation of motion, and you calculate the kinetic energy of the Brownian particles, and the statistical mechanics says that it has to be equal to this value, and this gives this relation. Alternatively, if you disregard this mass term, this is a long time limit. If your particle is large enough, this particle is dominated by the potential force, you have this time evolution equation, and the statistical mechanics says that under this potential, the distribution of x has to obey this Boltzmann distribution, and whichever condition you take, you get this result, and that's a very classical way presentation of the fluctuation dissipation theorem. Now, so far, maybe you know this about the theory of Brownian motion, and to that extent, I think this is all textbook matter. Now, I'm going to give you a slightly advanced course of the Brownian motion theory, and I am thinking of some general shaped particles, like bean-like particles. Now, in this particle, you have a number of coordinates, so the position coordinate x, y, z, and also you have an angular coordinate, or radian coordinate. For one rigid particle, you have six variables. If you have two particles, they are doing Brownian motion, you have 12 degrees of freedom. So the whole, in general, if the system has degrees of freedom, f, then you have coordinate. You need f degrees of coordinate. And for this, and the potential energy, we can define the potential energy. And then just following the previous, the same argument that I showed previously, you can show that these equations, in the absence of the random force, this is a macroscopic equation, and it tells that balance between the potential force and this is the frictional force. If this particle moves in a fluid, is velocity xi dot. Now bear in mind that xi dot remember both the translational velocity and the rotational velocity. But in both cases, the frictional force is written in this form. And this is a balance between the potential force and the frictional force. And you just add up this and random force down here. And you can also show that, so the, by just repeating the same argument, so this this is the, this you can also prove this and fluctuation dissipation theorem. This theta ij have this, has to have this correlation function. Now the very important consequence of this theory is this reciprocal relationship. Theta ij is equal to theta ji. And I'll come back to this point later.
Can you explain why the why that friction matrix becomes configuration dependent?
Well, because I'll give you an this is an example.
Oh, okay.
For example, that if you have a rod-like particles and if you move this way, I want to emphasize that the reciprocal relationship is a highly non-trivial relationship. Theta ij is equal to theta ji is a remarkable, for me, it's a remarkable law. And it's the very classical wisdom of Stokesian dynamics and called Lorentz.
Howard Brenner.
The hydrodynamicist called the Lorentz reciprocal relationship. Am I right?
You can ask why you're assuming the delta correlation in time. I mean, it seems like if these particles.
It is assumed. It is, but okay. From the phenomenological point of view, sure. This reciprocal relationship is purely a result of the hydrodynamics. Right. You start from the hydrodynamics, you can prove that.
That's the time scale over which you can just flick it. It will just come to a stop. And this thing is big frictions.
So yeah. I'm talking about there's a long time limit. So this is a simple example. Also, you can the rather non-trivial result is that so if you have some helical shape, if this particle moves and there is some torque friction constant in torque. Alternatively, if this helical shaped particles rotate, there will be some frictional translational force. And this coefficient must be equal to each other. It seems to be remarkable. Now, so the proof of the, there are three kinds of, to my knowledge, there are three kinds of the proof of the reciprocal relation. And one is purely hydrodynamics. You start from the Stokes equation, you know the definition of the theta ij, and then you can prove that. And this is usually written in many textbooks, like Howard Brenner's textbook. The second one is hydrodynamics. I don't know whether some people said it can be a consequence of the Onsager's reciprocal relationship. This is purely phenomenology. I do not talk about this. And but the third proof, I'll talk about the third proof that is purely based on statistical mechanics. It has nothing to do with hydrodynamics. It can be proven purely from statistical mechanics. So what you can do is the following. The reason I'm giving this talk is that how much is this known? Maybe this is such a very plain, simple thing, and this must have been documented somewhere else, but somewhere.
But then I want to know if somebody.
I briefly remember that some people in Minnesota, there was in the last conference, there was some talk on this kind. So maybe what I'm talking is not may not be new. I mean, this must be. But it is not seen, frequently seen in the literature. So I'm giving the talk. So the problem is the following. Okay, this has nothing to do with the hydrodynamics of Brownian motion, but I think it's convenient to discuss the problem in terms of the Brownian motion. So, okay, so you have a big particle and it's surrounded in a fluid. So the okay, let's review the problem from the statistical mechanics, from the mechanical point of view. Gamma stands for the whole coordinate, the moment, the position, and the momentum of the fluid molecules only. Now, bear in mind that I am regarding that the particle position as an external parameter. I think it's a control parameter. So the Hamiltonian of the system can be written as a function of gamma with some external parameter x. Okay. Now, if the particle is fixed at the position x, and then you ask what is the average force acting on the particle. Okay, and this is the microscopic force. This is fluctuating. It depends on the configuration of the surrounding fluid molecules. And so the microscopic force that we observe is an average of this. Average with some, so we put some distribution function and then take an average with respect to the configuration of the fluid molecules. And if, of course, P is, if the system is at equilibrium, we have this Boltzmann distribution, and then you can easily prove that this Fy is an average of the derivative of the free energy, where A is this, define this, and the standard expression for the free energy. This is the free energy or the potential of mean phase. Mean force is the same thing, I think. Now, the dynamics. So to discuss the dynamics, I consider the following problem. Suppose that the system is at equilibrium at before this time, and then we start at time t equals zero, we start to move the Brownian particle with constant velocity, xi dot. Then we ask, what is the average force acting on this Brownian particle? And this procedure that you know how to do that. You just solve this Liouville equation and then calculate this average. And for if you can do this calculation, assuming that xi dot, you are moving your Brownian particles slowly, then you can do you can use a linear perturbation theory. And this is the result. I do not show any calculation, but it's a very straightforward calculation. And so this is the result is that, so this is, if the system, the particle is not moving, this is the force, average force. And if the particle is moving with velocity, xi dot, you have this, some extra factor. And this extra factor is related to this, the time correlation of the, well, in this case, random force is the actual microscopic force minus the mean force. The time correlation of this gives you, this is a exact result, no cheat. So if you assume that this time correlation of this force is very short, you get that average, so this
is the hydrodynamic equation.
So okay, these two sets of equations that say that, yeah, so the theta ij is just described by, is given by this expression, the integral of the time correlation function. Well, alternatively, we can put it this way. That's a fluctuation, the spatial theorem. And the very important thing is there is no hydrodynamics. I have not used, it's a very general theorem. So what do we learn? So, okay, I think I'm near the end. I can leave from the Brownian motion and I can talk about any problems, coarse graining problems, so polymers. So we know that from this molecular problem, so we do some coarse graining. And at least that there is a statistical mechanics says that there's, okay, I think all people here in this agree with each other that the procedure, this is an impractical, but I think that's a very basic of the the basic theorem and behind the coarse graining. So the so this is a whole coordinate, and you pick up some certain slowly varying coordinate x. Well, actually x, it does not matter whether you just pick up any degrees of freedom x. And so this the Hamilton, the system, and you want to describe the state of the system in terms of x. Here you have an Hamiltonian H gamma, and from this you can at least calculate the equilibrium partition function, and or you can also this is the Boltzmann distribution that the probability of finding the system or finding your system in the configuration is gamma is given by this. Now, for this, you can define this free energy. So you just integrate with this constraint of the delta function. Then you have an this is a free energy for a given fixed value of the external, it's a fixed value of the parameter x, fixed degrees of freedom. There must be some proper name for this, maybe some constrained free energy or free energy. This is everybody, statistical mechanics, all people are using this concept, but I have not. Anyway, okay. So this is the definition of the free energy for a given a set of the constrained variable. And if you want to, if the system is at equilibrium, so if you want to calculate the partition function, you just do this integral. So the A just plays the same role as the Hamiltonian here. This is exactly not it. And of course, at equilibrium, the probability of finding your system in the structure X is given by this one. This is a static case. And of course, you can't write this in terms of the two body potential, how to maneuver, it's a big problem. I think that's the central issue of this conference. But I will not go into that point. Now here is what we learn from the strategy theory of Brownian motion for the strategy of the dynamical coarse graining. we have some microscopic description of the system, and suppose that if X is a set of slow variables, okay, this is very important. What are the appropriate set of slow variables? Quite important. I think this is the central. We know that it has to be, well, if the fluctuation, okay. What I have shown you is that, if we learn from the previous Brownian motion theory, that this is a very general time evolution equation. if we ignore the fluctuation, the general form of the time evolution equation should be written in this form, at least for slowly varying variables. Because if we can control X externally, then this gives you the force that is needed to change your X. But if there is no external force, this must be the equation. You must have this equation, and therefore this equation determines the time evolution of the system.
There's no memory in that equation, I'm surprised. You say this will always come out like this, but the more responsive people would say this is the right equation you solve, and it always has a memory kernel.
This is a slow variable. Appropriate set of slow variables. And the appropriate set of slow variables is such a way that it has to be self-contained.
If you take more responsive and you assume the variables you've kept to write the dynamics, and everything else is slower, then
could just basically assume that correlation function is a delta. So that's and then all this comes out of it.
Contingent to a color choice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The proper choice, if you properly, if you can choose properly, slow variable, the good value.
I mean, the original equations were also Galilean invariant, while the Langevin equation, of course, is not. So can you do the same thing, restoring Galilean invariant?
Galilean?
I mean, if you go to a moving reference frame.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then the original equations will give you the same result. But you use this example where you drag a particle at constant force through the medium. Yeah. What would happen is, of course, that eventually.
Yeah,
that
okay.
Force
Now, okay. I think that the situation that we are considering is that we have a particle in a sitting in a medium, and the medium is contained in a box. And so the system, you don't have to have this Galilean invariance. So you have some fixed.
Right, but could you derive a coarse grained equation which is
Galilean homogeneous? Yes, I can, yeah. If you take into account of this medium velocity, yeah. But that's more another issue, But okay, these are the things that that was that you can prove. So, again, the important issue is this reciprocal relationship. Reciprocal relationship must hold. If you have, so the message that I think this is a message that we can learn from this classical wisdom is that suppose you have a, well, this is actually what Onsaka said a long time ago. I said 1932 or 1933. The very classical paper of Onsaga. Suppose that your time evolution equation is written, just forget. I think I have this next slide. Oh, okay. Let me just repeat. Friction constant is this reciprocal relationship is always true, independently of your system, as long as your time evolution equation is written in this form. And this is actually what Onsaga proved in his paper of 1932. And the as an example of the reciprocal relation is the following. This is a simple relation. Example, so you have some ohmic conductor, and you put electrode here. And then, so you put an potential, electric potential, and then the current time. And for the linear ships relationship, you have an ohmic law. And Rij is equal to Rji is another example of the reciprocal relationship. Usually, this is proven using ohmic law, but it has nothing to do with it. Onsaga claimed that this equation holds very independently of this phenomenological equations like Stokes equations. The Brownian the hydrodynamic equation that I showed is the one example. The hydrodynamic reciprocal relation is one example. And this example in conductivity is another example, and then maybe there are more. Also, then this is what Onsaga says. So that if fluctuation, this Onsaga says that what Onsaga says that if you have a proper set of variables, slow variables, the equation is always written in this form. A is the free energy or the potential of mean force. And here is what we call the friction constant, and friction constant is always symmetric. The theta ij is equal to theta ji, and this is and in the same paper Onsaga showed that This is slightly, I have slightly modified, but essentially what he said that, so therefore, the time evolution equation of the system is always written in this variational form. Variational form, the consists of this, what I call the dissipation function term, and this change of the potential term, A dot. And just if you take the derivative xi dot, you have this equation. So that determines the variation, the variational principle, that formalizes the variational principle in the time evolution of the system, which has slow variables.
Is this a minimization, or is this thing have to be stationary?
In this case, it is a minimization. Now, minimization with respect to xi dot, it does not tell you what is a steady state. It does not tell you the steady state. So it only tells you it only gives you this form. It does not tell you what is a steady state.
And the variational way of driving those equations. Yeah. Those are the Euler-Lagrange equations.
There's nothing like, you would say, that entropy production is minimal or something.
Well, actually, yes, you can write it down in this way, in terms of entropy, yes. But it does not tell you what is a steady state, for example, what is a steady state. I do not believe that we do not have a general principle that determines the steady state in a non-equilibrium state, but this only gives you the time evolution equation. If your system is x dot, you know what will be the state in the next moment. It is determined by this variational principle.
I mean, isn't the first term the rate at which the system is dissipating, and the second term is the rate of work?
That's right. Yeah. So this is those
two.
Yeah, that's a minimal. Yeah, that's right. Yes. But this principle is actually quite useful in terms of for soft matter. It can be used to describe this many problems, that some colloidal particles, that sedimentation problems. Well, this is where you have that this as particle sediment, there is a fluid motion starts, and then the very complex patterns can be observed, and that can be discussed by you can construct some continuum models to describe this phenomena. Phase separation kinetics, and another example, gel dynamics. So you squeeze gel, and then there's just water comes out, and this kind of this stress and the diffusion coupling can be also described by the variational principle. Nematohydrodynamics. Or many other phenomenological equations that describe the evolution of the nematics, liquid crystals, can be derived from the Onsager's variational principle. And so that's what I want to. Okay, I'm just in time.
Thank you.
I mean, it seems to me if you look the projection operator, Green, Kubo, Swansea, literature, I mean, effectively that formalism gives you a dissipation matrix that's symmetric by construction. So isn't the proof intrinsically there?
Is it symmetric?
In the Morey-Swansea stuff, you write some equations for some arbitrary slow variables that you want to define
in terms of the
gamma degrees of freedom.
Yeah.
And you end up with a set of Langevin, generalized Langevin equations, right?
Yeah.
Where the zeta matrix is actually a time correlation function.
right?
That's right.
But if you make the approximation that is the Markov approximation that's proportional to the delta function in time, you end up with a symmetric matrix based on the form of the random force. So isn't that a proof?
It is.
I mean, as soon as you say the variables you have are slow variables,
I think this follows. Maybe it's the same thing with the Moritz Vantik equations. The core of this equation, that's the time reversal symmetry of the underlying hydrogen, the mechanics, the Hamiltonian,
Can I state it differently? You're saying you're doing it, let's say, without hydrodynamics, but of course hydrodynamics is nothing you suddenly assume to be wrong. In some sense, hydrodynamics itself is a coarse-grained version of the equation you are using, and you're a coarse-grained version of basically the Liouville equation.
Right.
And someone, while writing hydrodynamics, actually told you cleverly what are the slow variables to give you hydrodynamics in this coarse-grained. So you say, well, I'm starting with the Liouville equation, I'm writing a formalism, and then I assume someone knew what these slow variables are. You basically, you are deriving hydrodynamics in the process by figuring out, oh, those are the...
So I think there's somebody picking us up for
the
for those
who
want to go. The rest can continue here.
Yeah.